Hello, my name is Stephanie Slog, and I am a second year Global Medical Affairs Fellow at Pfizer Consumer Healthcare. In the following webinar, I will be providing you with a high-level overview of consumer healthcare and consumer healthcare products. These encompass over-the-counter products which we commonly encounter in many retail stores. Please keep in mind that the following presentation represents my personal understanding and opinions and does not represent or reflect the opinions of Pfizer Consumer Healthcare. After listening to this webinar, you will have a better understanding of what is referred to as consumer healthcare products and how important they are to all of us. You will be able to differentiate the multiple categories as well as how they are regulated and classified. But first, let's test your knowledge. Taking a look at the list below, what do you believe is considered a consumer healthcare product? If you selected E, you are correct. These four subgroups of consumer healthcare products will be the main focus of the presentation. In the coming slides, we will dive into more depth of exactly what is incorporated in these categories and test your knowledge along the way. So, what exactly is consumer healthcare? Consumer healthcare encompasses the many aspects of the healthcare marketplace related to consumer decision making in the purchase of health products and healthcare services. There is a much larger marketplace for these products with well over 750,000 retail outlets that sell OTC products compared to the 54,000 pharmacies in the US which dispense prescription medications. These products play an important role in our lives. We take for granted the options and vast number of ailments we can mitigate by simply having these products a short drive, walk, or click away for immediate access. Products available allow individuals to prevent diseases, treat many common conditions, and in addition, enhance their quality of life. Imagine how cumbersome it would be to go see a doctor every time we needed Tums for an upset stomach. One key differentiator of these products compared to prescription medications is immediate access. They save time and allow consumers to take treatment into their own hands. It is much less time consuming to pick up a pain reliever at the grocery store or pharmacy when you need it for a headache or a backache, rather than taking the time to schedule an appointment, take time off work or school to attend the appointment, then fill the prescription at the pharmacy. The convenient access cuts down on not only the time, but also the money spent for doctor's appointments. Also, many times, OTC products are much less expensive than prescription medications, leading to cost savings not only for the individual, but also the healthcare system. Shown here are the four categories which make up consumer healthcare products. It is essential to understand the different categories and which products fall under each, as they have differing approval, registration, and labeling requirements to get them on the shelf. The first category we will cover is drugs. A drug is used in the diagnosis, cure, mitigation, treatment, or prevention of disease. It includes two subsets, prescription and non-prescription, also known as over-the-counter OTC drugs. For the purpose of our topic, we will focus on OTCs, as prescription medications are limited to sale in pharmacies. Whereas mentioned previously, the OTC drugs are available in many other marketplaces, opening the access to these products. There are approximately 800 OTC active ingredients available today that constitute greater than 100,000 OTC products available at retail outlets such as pharmacies, convenience and grocery stores, or mass merchandisers. Because of the much larger population exposure and no learned intermediary such as a doctor or nurse to monitor patients while on these medications, OTCs have a wider margin of safety. Similar to prescription drugs, OTC medicines are regulated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and are safe and effective when used as directed according to the label. OTCs treat many common ailments including pain, fever, cough and cold, upset stomach, and allergies to name a few. OTC drugs should not be confused with dietary supplements such as vitamins, minerals, or herbals, which have different rules and regulations and will be covered later in the webinar. Let's now review important milestones for OTC drugs. The Food and Drug Act of 1906 prohibited misbranding and adulteration of food and drugs. This left hazardous consumer items still remaining on the market. It wasn't until 1937 when an untested pharmaceutical was introduced to the market and led to many deaths, prompting the enacting of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act of 1938, where drugs must be proven safe before marketing. It also tightened the control against unlawful cosmetics and medical devices. Over a decade later, in 1951, the Durham-Humphrey Amendment created a two-tiered drug class system, which defined which drugs required medical supervision and limited the sale only by a medical professional. It took until 1962 and the passage of the Kefauver-Harris Amendments, which required drug makers to prove that their drug was not only safe, but also effective before the FDA approves it for sale. And finally, in 1972, we have the installment of the monograph process and review of OTC drugs for GRAS status, meaning if these products were on the market prior to 1972 for a significant amount of time, then they were generally recognized as safe and effective or having GRAS status under specific indications, and with the monograph process, it outlined the boundaries that these drugs could be used for. Now let's take a glimpse of the similarities and differences of prescription and OTC drugs, comparing them side by side. The access of an RX is restricted to pharmacies compared to OTC drugs, which can be sold in many different marketplaces. Both RX and OTC drugs can be approved for use by the FDA as an NDA or a new drug application, but depending on the OTC drug ingredient and indication, it can fall under the monograph process, which will be covered in the next slide in more depth. Both products require safety and efficacy to be proven through clinical trials, unless again under the GRAS status for certain OTCs. Since their intended use is not monitored by a doctor or prescriber, OTC drugs need to have a wider margin of safety compared to prescription medications. By law, OTC drug labeling, known as a drug facts label, must include all information so that an ordinary consumer can safely and effectively use the product. And lastly, the FDA oversees RX product advertising, whereas the FTC, or Federal Trade Commission, has authority over OTC advertising, just as it does for other consumer products. As mentioned previously, there are two regulatory pathways in which OTC drugs can be approved to be sold. The monograph process is a regulatory standard for pre-1972 OTC drugs, which were categorized as generally recognized as safe and effective. The monograph acts as a recipe book covering acceptable ingredients, doses, formulation, indication, and labeling requirements to be followed. The final monographs are published in the government's Code of Federal Regulations, or CFR. OTC drugs which do not fall under the GRAS or monograph status require a new drug application, or NDA. This provides sufficient data to the FDA to show that the drug is safe and effective for them to determine whether the benefits outweigh the risk, to evaluate if the proposed labeling is also adequate, and also identify if the methods used in manufacturing would be appropriate. As a recap, a monograph product with established safety and efficacy and labeling and indications as outlined in the specific drug monograph does not require clinical studies. However, each new OTC drug not conforming to the monograph requires a NDA and clinical trials. Picking an OTC drug off the shelf, you will be unable to differentiate whether it is an NDA or a monograph product, as both have the same labeling requirements. Since monograph products have pre-specified bounds and there may be multiple products under different names that have the same indication or ingredients, they do not have the ability to request for exclusivity like an OTC NDA drug product does. This is beneficial for these NDA products due to the costly nature of submitting an NDA and conducting clinical trials. Rx to OTC switch is the process of switching a drug dose or indication or both from prescription status to OTC. This allows for access 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to affordable healthcare options for busy families and caregivers, which empowers individuals and families to meet their everyday healthcare needs with these trusted products, which were previously prescription only. All RxOTC switches will require an NDA submitted to the FDA for approval. One unique factor of RxOTC switches are the additional studies which are needed to assess consumer behaviors to determine if they are able to properly use the product according to the labeling on the package. Now moving on to our second category, medical devices. Medical devices range from simple tongue depressors and bedpans to complex programmable pacemakers and laser surgical devices. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration regulates medical devices to assure their safety and effectiveness. At times it may be difficult to differentiate a medical device from a drug. However, if the primary intended use of the product is achieved through chemical action or by metabolizing in the body, the product is usually a drug. Medical devices are broken into three classes. The class to which a device is assigned determines, among other things, the type of application required for FDA clearance to the market. The device classification depends on the intended use of the device, which is how it affects the human body, as well as the indications for use or the clinical condition it is intended to diagnose, treat, reconstruct, or improve upon. For example, a scalpel's intended use may be to cut tissue. A subset of intended use arises when a more specialized indication is added to the device's labeling, such as for making an incision in a specific type of tissue. 47% of medical devices on the market are considered Class 1. These have minimal potential harm to the user and have a simple design and manufacturing processes with known history of safe use. Examples of these include elastic bandages and enema kits. The next largest class will be Class 2 medical devices, which account for 43% of the market. A device is considered Class 2 if general controls alone are not adequate to assure safety and efficacy. Special controls, as well as special labeling and post-marketing surveillance, is required. Class 2 medical devices include powered wheelchairs and some pregnancy tests. The remainder are Class 3 medical devices, which are the highest risk and require the most stringent regulations, as they are usually needed to support or sustain human life or present potential unreasonable risk of illness or injury. Examples of these include implantable pacemakers and breast implants. Now let's test your knowledge. Can you correctly classify the following medical devices? Looking at the first line of medical devices, depicted is a pacemaker, replacement heart valve, and a total joint replacement. Based on the information on the previous slide, what class would you say these are? If you classified these as Class 3, you are correct. For the second row of medical devices, we have a tongue depressor, arm sling, and a stethoscope. If you determine these are Class 1, you are correct. For the third row of medical devices, we have an X-ray, physiological monitors and surgical drapes, and a pump. If you classified these as Class 2, you are correct. To be approved for market, medical devices can go through one of two regulatory pathways. The Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act requires device manufacturers to notify the FDA of their intent to market a medical device to prove their safety and efficacy. One avenue for approval is if a device is similar to another device already on the market. Then a pre-market notification, or PMN, or 510K will need to be submitted to the FDA. This will demonstrate that it is substantially equivalent as safe and effective to the device already on the market. If the device is ruled to be substantially equivalent by the FDA, the manufacturer can market the device. However, if the medical device contains new materials or differs in design from products already on the market, the FDA requires a pre-market approval, or PMA, application to provide valid scientific evidence collected from human clinical trials showing that the device is safe and effective for its intended use. Using what you learned about medical devices, take a look at the products shown here. We have personal lubricant, elastic band-aids, Bisine allergy relief eye drops, and dental floss. Can you determine which of these products are or are not medical devices? If you classified 1, 2, and 4 as medical devices, you are correct. These products shown that are medical devices include personal lubricant, elastic bandages, and dental floss, and these are all Class 1 medical devices. Visine eye drops are considered a drug as it contains nephazoline as a redness reliever and phenyramine as an antihistamine. The third category of consumer healthcare products is dietary supplements. This category includes vitamins, minerals, herbals, or other botanicals, amino acids, and other dietary substances. Under the Dietary Supplements Health and Education Act, known as DSHEA, which was passed in 1994, dietary supplements fall into a special category under the general umbrella of foods, not drugs, and requires that every supplement be labeled as a dietary supplement. Under the Dietary Supplements Health and Education Act of 1994, the manufacturer of a dietary supplement or dietary ingredient is responsible for ensuring that the product is safe before marketing. Once a product has reached the U.S. market, the U.S. FDA is responsible for monitoring safety and has the authority to remove any unsafe dietary supplement, as well as any product that has misleading claims or is adulterated or misbranded. Products marketed in the U.S. prior to the passage of DSHEA in 1994 are assumed to have a history of safe use and are considered to be grandfathered in. If a new dietary ingredient is to be introduced to the U.S. market, which was not on the market before October 15, 1994, the FDA must be notified of its intent 75 days before introducing it to the market. This allows the FDA to examine the available safety data and, if necessary, to request more information or to deny marketing of the dietary supplement containing the new ingredient. Old dietary ingredients, which are those marketed as a dietary supplement prior to the October 15, 1994 date, are presumed to be safe and notification is required. Labeling requirements for dietary supplements differ from other consumer healthcare products. They require a supplemental facts panel of contained ingredients. Similar to all other consumer healthcare products, the Federal Trade Commission, or FTC, oversees the advertising of dietary supplements. Manufacturers may make three types of claims for dietary supplement products. These include health claims, which describe intended benefit of using the product, such as adequate calcium throughout life may reduce the risk of osteoporosis. The second type of claims are structure function claims. These describe the link between a food substance and disease or a health-related condition, such as calcium builds strong bones. The third type of claim that can be made are nutrient content claims. These describe the amount of nutrient or dietary substance in a product, such as low sodium. The DSHEA required disclaimer is required when a manufacturer makes a structure function claim which describes the role of a nutrient or dietary ingredient intended to affect the structure or function of the body. The manufacturer is responsible for ensuring the accuracy and truthfulness of these claims as they are not approved by the FDA. The disclaimer must also state that these products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any diseases, because only a drug can legally make such a claim. Displayed here, you can see example labels for OTC drugs and dietary supplements, and how they vary greatly. The Drug Facts label has a specific format to help consumers compare and select the correct OTC drug and follow dosage instructions, which all OTC drugs must conform to. As you can see, the Drug Facts label has many more predefined sections of information and looks quite different from the supplements label. For dietary supplements, the FDA requires different information appear on a dietary supplement label, which includes a descriptive name of the product stating that it is a supplement, the name and place of business of the manufacturer, packer, or distributor, a complete list of ingredients, as well as the net contents of the product. In addition, each dietary supplement must have the nutrition labeling in the form of a supplement facts panel. This label must identify each dietary ingredient contained in the product. As defined by the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, a cosmetic is a product except for a soap intended to be applied to the human body for cleansing, beautifying, promoting attractiveness, or altering the appearance. In other words, it is intended to exert a physical and not a physiological effect on the human body. Examples of cosmetics include skin moisturizers, perfumes, lipsticks, fingernail polish, eye and facial makeup preparations, cleansing shampoo, hair color, and deodorant. Similarly to dietary supplements, cosmetics do not need FDA approval prior to being sold. Cosmetics also have generally defined labeling requirements for their principal display panel, which requires the name of the product, identity, warnings, net content, directions for safe use, name and place of business, ingredient declaration, and any other required information. Exceptions and differences may be applicable to some cosmetic products. On the label, the ingredients of the product must be listed by their common or usual names. For our last knowledge check, we have three products: deodorant, mascara, and anti-dandruff shampoo. From these products, which would you consider to be a cosmetic? If you selected all three, you are correct. However, the anti-dandruff shampoo is a cosmetic as well as a drug. This is because it is intended to cleanse the hair and is used for the treatment of dandruff. A cosmetic is also a drug when it is intended to cleanse, beautify, or promote attractiveness, as well as to treat or prevent disease or otherwise affect the structure or any function of the human body. Other drug and cosmetic combinations include toothpaste with fluoride, antiperspirants, moisturizers, and makeup with SPF. These products need to comply with both regulations and have different approval requirements as well as registration and labeling differences. In closing, consumer healthcare products are available in a large number of venues to provide convenience and access for consumers to take treatment into their own hands. This is an important area where pharmacists have a unique role. In retail stores, pharmacists most times are the only healthcare providers who will be on site and are essential to guide consumers on the correct product choice and answer questions that may arise. From an industry perspective, working at a consumer healthcare pharmaceutical company, the pharmacist brings an unmatched perspective which is highly valued, as a pharmacist can share and provide insight into the landscape of where these products are sold and the dynamic of the patient-pharmacist interaction. Lastly, the regulatory pathway, labeling, advertising, and other requirements differ according to the category of the consumer healthcare product. The information from my presentation is available from the following references. For more information on these topics, please feel free to access these sites. Thank you for listening to this webinar. I hope the information provided was helpful, and you can now differentiate and know the nuances behind these different products when you come across them on the shelf the next time you see them. Be sure to listen to the other webinars to learn more about industry topics.